without you holding me up. Now I'm strong enough for both of us, both of us, both of us, both of us. I am a giant, stand up on my shoulders, tell me what you see. Cause I am a giant, we'll be breaking boulders underneath our feet.
Next episode of the Philosophy Symposium. With this interview, I have managed to track down Dr. Pat Sim, who is the newly elected president of the ACC. The school has recently been ticked off from their TEXA accreditation, and it looks like there's going to be great things coming for chiropractors in Australia. One thing that I'm going to put out and out the front of this interview is that it is a long interview, so it's going to be broken down into two or three sections. We spend about an hour talking about time, about the ACC, and about some of the politics, that events that are going on in chiropractic in Australia. So make sure you tune in this week. Make sure you tune in a couple of weeks' time and get the rest of the interview. But before we go any further with the interview, I'm going to make sure also that I put a little bit of a plug in for the ACC. They've worked really hard. They've got a lot of funding to be able to get through their processes for recognition under TEXA and their accreditation. But that's really just the start. One of the things that I talk about with Pat through the interview is what's required and what the next hurdles are for the school. And that's towards the end of the interview. So the most important thing from my perspective is to send them students. So if you can please consider sending them students, sending them finances. They are going to take some students, but what we want to do is make sure that they're not going to take three or four for their first year, that they're looking at tens of students, not just individuals. And that's going to make sure that the chiropractic college is a success in the future.
Thanks for joining me, Pat. I appreciate your time and your effort, and I know that you're busy with lots of different stuff going on in your life at the moment, especially, you know, with the ACC getting its accreditation tick recently. So that's also something I really want to talk to you about. But I remember sitting in the Philosophy Symposium last year, and my brain was spinning a little bit with some of the content and some of the depth of what you discussed. Now, it was all centered around principle number 6, which is, you know, time. So I'm going to really try to leave you a little bit of the floor, and I'm going to interject at some points. But if you want to hit the high points for some people that are just joining us, that'd be great. So over to you, mate.
Okay, well, that's a bit of a dangerous tactic, I think. if you feel as though we're sort of getting in a place that we don't need to get to, yeah, let me know. And it might be good to, you know, just ask the questions that come to mind. I spend my time thinking about this stuff. I don't necessarily feel as though I have a strong handle on it, but I do think about it a fair bit. Perhaps I'll start by running this past you. If you could imagine that, you know, at night time you go outside and you look up at the stars. The furthest star you can see is a very, very, very long way away. And I think we all have this idea that the light coming from the star takes a long, long time to get to us. So that therefore, when we're seeing these stars which were, you know, already a billion years old, but we're only seeing them now. So we already have a sense that time and space are closely related. And in fact, you know, we know that Einstein says that they are one and the same, this thing called space-time. But there's some very interesting facts that come up with that. One is that if we are standing outside and we're looking up at the night sky and we look as far as we possibly can in just one direction, we can actually see light which is as old as the universe. So the universe is considered to be 13.4 billion years old. And if we could see that far out, we would be able to see the beginning of the universe. So the next step, I think, I mean, that itself is amazing, that you could perhaps see that far and that light is still traveling around. We talk about this radiant heat that's still within the universe, which is a reminder of this Big Bang thing. But I could then go to the opposite side of the planet and I could look in the completely opposite direction as far back as I can, and I'm still going to see the beginning of the universe. So what I find fascinating about that is that it doesn't matter which direction from the planet I am looking, I'm going to see the beginning as a halo surrounding the whole of the universe. Mm-hmm. Now, I find that surprising because we think of the Big Bang being this tiny little thing that expands out. And yet in this instance, we are on the inside of the Big Bang, which is on the outside of all of us. So, you know, I don't know if that's the appropriate way to start, but I think it's those paradoxes that I find fascinating when it comes to the discussion around time. And what I find even more fascinating is that chiropractic has something to say about that.
Because everyone's favorite, you know, regularly ask people, what's your favorite chiropractic principle? And, oh, all processes take time. And it's almost, if we look at the way that the structure of the first few principles are written, you almost get to the point where you go, hold on a second, it just seems out of place. And like, obviously you go from, you know, the major premise and into some of the logical syllogisms that sort of step down from that process, and you get to time, you're like, hold on, where did that come? But it's such a fascinating topic because there is so much complexity to it. You know,
there is, and it's more than chiropractic. Obviously, the principle of time is not a chiropractic only principle.
Correct.
You know, as humans, and we have more discussion about this too, perhaps. You know, are we the only thing that can experience time? Because there is a prevailing thought out there that time doesn't actually exist; that it's an illusion. And people as far back as Parmenides, back in, you know, ancient Greece, were saying that there's no such thing as time. We are just noticing incremental changes in things. And therefore, there's not necessarily time flowing, like Heraclitus was saying, that there's just all these different events. And for our minds, we just see that as the passing of time. So, you know, time itself is not chiropractic. Yeah. The other problem with the chiropractic philosophy is I think sometimes we think of ourselves in a bubble and that our philosophy is separate and distinct from anything else. And I wonder, though, if that's necessarily true, because we're working in a world which is situated within a solar system, within a galaxy, within a universe. And so there must be some truths to our philosophy if it is true. And so what I wanted to do was sort of bring in some of the science-y stuff to the principle of time to see if it still stacks up. And so one of the first things I started to look at was, you know, just going back to that idea of space-time, that principle six itself is incomplete because it only talks about time. It doesn't consider the fact that time and space are one and the same. So therefore, really, the principle of time should be the principle of space-time. And I think if we start thinking in those terms, then we can see that chiropractic actually has quite a deep insight into the nature of the universe.
And one of the things that, like, I remember reading something on Einstein. I don't know whether it was reading something. Probably knowing me, it was watching a doco or something like that. But and they talk about his E equals MC squared, and the fact that's only a portion of the actual equation that he came up with. That there was a portion that he left off that doesn't really get discussed. But that's actually that continuity of time. That there's that section of it that seems to be neglected in some of the writing. So,
even each of those elements within that equation. So you've got energy equals mass times acceleration of light. Okay, inherent within each of those elements is time. So, you know, you can't have a speed without there being a time.
Yeah.
You can't have a mass in which you have a time which to measure that mass. And similarly with energy. Yeah. So time is an inherent element within that equation. And just thinking about that now, it's interesting that within chiropractic philosophy, we have these three elements of force, intelligence, and matter. And Stevenson himself says that the element that combines those three things is time. In fact, that's the only comment he makes about time, is that time is an element to those three separate entities. And it's the time that allows a bonding between matter and intelligence. So, I think it's very interesting that you make that parallel between Einstein and chiropractic.
Well, because I think like Einstein too, like I'm such a, I leave all that deep stuff to you guys. I just keep questioning you guys, so I learn more about it.
You've got the same sort of haircut as Einstein.
Yep, exactly. Well, in reverse, it's to the bottom rather than at the top. But look, so you spoke about space-time, or you speak about space-time. And therefore all events require space-time. That was one of the first revisions that you put on that principle number six. And then you take it another step further and you say the function of intelligence is to create space-time. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit more towards that? Like, how did you take that next step?
Well, there is a lot of assumptions that come along this way, like there is in most philosophies. But I think when you make them, you'd want to go back and revisit them and then flesh them out a little bit more. So I will refer to my own notes here.
please do, because as I said, I remember sitting there last year, and I know that you had a lot of that stuff that you were reading off, like, because you're trying to, there's no way you could have sort of memorized all of that or even paraphrased it in an effective way to make sure that your message got across. But it was one thing that a lot of the people at the symposium said to me is that they really enjoyed it, but it was almost, there was so much depth to it. And this is part of the reason as to why I created the symposium. And this is another reason as to why I created the podcast, because a lot of the times you know, whilst we enjoy the experience of being there on a weekend, we don't necessarily have the time to digest it in an effective manner because there's all sorts of other stuff going on. So I want you to read it. I'd like to engage in it a little bit more because I still got so much to learn.
Yeah, you raised another really good point there too. And I think this becomes partly political. Within Australia, there are a lot of chiropractors who espouse the philosophy of chiropractic. And that's a very, very good thing. But when you ask them how they get to know about it, maybe they've heard it at a seminar or they've spoken to someone about it, but they feel as though from those small superficial events that they have a deep understanding of it. And if it weren't for the ACP, so the Academy of Chiropractic Philosophers, there's no way I would have got the understanding that I have of it now. And in fact, the more I delved into it over the year of that course, the more I realized how much I didn't know about it. So, you know, if you're out there and you think you know chiropractic from a philosophy point of view, and you haven't done the ACP, or you haven't studied somewhere like Life or Sherman or one of those programs, then you don't know the philosophy. You know it in the same sort of way that I pretended to know astrophysics, but I don't. You've got to really delve into it to get a sense for it.
Yeah.
So what I was saying with that first revision was, firstly that there's space-time should be there in place of time, okay? Because they are the same. And we can't then talk about processes necessarily, because processes, based on Heisenberg's principle, you can either know something's velocity, so you know how fast it's going, or you know its location, but you can't know both at the same time without there being some error around it. Yeah. So what Heisenberg starts talking about is having events rather than having processes. Mm-hmm. So if we talk about event, then we're talking about something that happens within space-time and all the parameters that go with that. This started me thinking in terms of, you know, what all this meant as far as space and the cosmos goes. And it raised the idea of entropy and raised the idea of universal expansion. So I had to go big picture here firstly. And going back to the idea of the Big Bang, there was this idea that, you know, all the matter, all the energy of the universe was compressed in one tiny, small section. And firstly, I don't know how that worked out. It was tiny and small because there's no space or time in which to define that. But, you know, everything's compressed in one area.
Yeah.
And then something happens and all of that energy starts to rapidly expand. But in doing so, the purity of the energy that was at the first place starts to break down. In doing so, it converts itself into matter. But that matter itself starts to break down over time as space and time continue to expand. And so I started to think to myself that, you know, with the pulling apart of that energy, with that expansion, then we can think of that then as the forces within the universe. So whether those forces are, I don't know, fire, or whether they are, I don't know, something rotting, all of those things are processes which involve that expansion of space-time. It's almost as space and time expand, it pulls that matter further and further apart.
Yes.
If you look at it from our point of view, as you and I age, as you and I go through space-time, effectively what's happening to us is we're simply being pulled apart. You know, we start with these beautiful little babies and we sort of expand into bigger beings. And we sort of hit a critical limit there and things start to pull apart. So, you know, start getting wrinkles and, you know, our organs start falling out and, you know, as a
hair starts going.
Oh, your hair starts going. and then as you die, that expansion continues because your corpse starts separating down to the individual molecules and all the other goo and stuff. So we continue to expand. Perhaps, though, in that process, we may have had kids, which is, again, a further expansion of us. Mm. So I started seeing this degradation, this entropy of matter as a force. And therefore, the only force really which is driving that is space-time expansion. Mm-hmm. So from there, I was saying that really the only force that you can experience in the universe is space-time. Now, that then fits quite well with principle. So when we look at, where are we? Principle 8, is it principle 8? Mm-hmm. You want more?
9, 10.
9, 10.
Unswerving in its simplicity for those that we can access. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, it's the function of intelligence. So Stevenson says that time is the element which combines matter with intelligence. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what I'm saying with this revision then is that the role of intelligence then is actually to create space-time, which means intelligence has created the Big Bang, that intelligence created space and time so that it can have some sort of matter.
Yep.
Okay, and by having some matter, we'll get to the end here, that intelligence itself has the opportunity to experience things. Mm. So with no space, with no time, where there is no matter, there's nothing actually to experience.
Yep.
So the idea then was intelligence's job was to create space-time in which it can interact with matter and energy.
Yep. I'm following.
Okay, good. Good.
You look at me like, you're looking at me like I'm a little lost. I am, but that's okay. Because see, the benefit of doing the podcast is that I get to rehear it 5 times over. So it'll continue to seep in. So that's okay.
I think the easiest way to think about it is things over time, they just stretch and distort. Okay, so whether that's a life which is stretching and distorting and breaking down, when you look at those forces, and chiropractic talks about universal forces being destructive, what I'm saying here is that space-time is destructive.
Yeah, and I think most of the chiropractic fraternity, you know, the second law of thermodynamics in that entropy model, tend to understand that. You know, I think you can sort of see that, well, given enough time and given enough weathering and enough exposure to that external, those external elements, everything does tend to decompose and destruct.
Yeah, and I think it raises an existential issue for the chiropractor. Mm. You know, what is the purpose of chiropractic? Mm. You know, we talk a lot about maybe wellness, I don't like the term, or health, or life, or whatever it might be. But you know, what is our role? We can talk specifically about we're looking for subluxations. We're looking to reduce those subluxations so innate intelligence can flow better. But what is the impact of that? You know, we hear miracles. You know, Dr. X came and adjusted me, and I could walk again, or I started breathing again, or I came back alive. I've heard of these stories, but you know, is our job to keep someone alive? Is it really our job to keep us healthy? And I wonder if maybe that is very much a materialistic view of what chiropractic does.
Yeah. And it's hard to sometimes separate it, because I know that, my paper was on vitalism, in chiropractic education, but a lot of it then was the comparative to the mechanistic viewpoint, and that, you're looking at everything from a vitalistic notion, still through mechanistic lens of, well, how do you say that it's vitalism? Well, you use a structure of the body, which is then mechanistic in its focus. So, inevitably there's a bit of a dilemma there.
Yeah. Which
sometimes it's hard to sort of get your head around. I mean, I think one of the things that always resonated quite well with me was the discussion on force being, that internal resistive force being greater than the external destructive force. And if as a chiropractor I can increase the internal resistive forces of the body, then that's going to set us up well for a greater expression of life.
Which is what and for how long?
Space-time expression.
And for how long and for what purpose? So I wonder if we become too egocentric. We worry too much about there's a paradox here, but we worry too much about the individual, too much about us. And perhaps we don't think about things if we want to anthropomorphize something here, you know, what's the intention of the universe? What's the intention of life? If we're subscribers to the idea of evolution, then, you know, we are all connected to some tiny little single cell amoeba type
being. Part of that plankton somewhere.
Yeah. So, you know, how do we get from that point to where we are now? Okay. And what has driven that? And I have no doubt that we are not the end of that line.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, are we then focusing too much on us as an individual human, as opposed to the actual overall drive of what it is that an intelligence or the universe, whatever you want to call it, is trying to proceed towards?
Where we're headed in the long term. Yeah.
Where we are heading. And given that scope, then what's our role? You know, as chiropractors, what's our role in all of that?
Yeah. Understand.
Yeah.
So you move through the function of intelligence is to create space-time into the function of space-time is to unite intelligence and matter. I think we sort of have probably covered that one too. But then you start heading into consciousness.
So as we start to change dynamic and start our conversation on consciousness, I'm actually going to pause the interview with Pat and just give a massive thank you to listening to another episode of the Philosophy Symposium podcast. It will pick up at exactly this point next time, and I'll make sure that we try to do enough of an introduction so you know where we're at. But thank you very much for listening, guys. I appreciate your time, and I hopefully you look forward to sharing a little bit more in the future. Thank you. Now I'm strong enough for both of us. Both of us. Both of us. Both of us. My shoulders, tell me what you see.